Marty, let's talk about why good songs fail.
I've got one reason we can talk about today. You know, I think good songs fail a lot of times because they just don't stand out from the crowd. I remember with my first publisher, one time I brought a song in there that I was really excited about, and he said, yeah, you really wrote the heck out of that. Come here, let me show you something. And he went, we had, at the time, we had this huge CD player that had like 100 CDs in it. And he goes, here's my version of that song. And then here's Ron, the other guy that wrote for our company. He's like, we have a lot of those. You know, and it kind of
same title,
same direction, you know, and they were all written well. And he said, you know, we haven't gotten either of these cut. We're probably not going to get yours cut. You know, it's just that's something so many people write that it just doesn't stand out, you know. So I thought we could talk about how do you make your song stand out?
Yeah, I think for me, that really hits home because I was talking to Mark Bright the other day, and he was the publisher that gave me my first writing deal. And I said, why did you sign me? Because I didn't feel like I was particularly the best writer at that point. And he was like, you were different. You said things in a different way. And I think that's part of what you're talking about, mm-hmm. is that if you're trying to chase the trends, if you're trying to just write songs exactly like that successful writer of the moment is writing, then you're going to miss your shot to be who you are and to take advantage of you being you, kind of, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, too, we teach a class sometimes where we give people the same title. We have everybody in the class write that same title. And it's been amazing when we do that because 80% of the people will write that title exactly the same way.
Yeah.
And then you have 10% of the people that are slightly different. And then you have 10% where I'm going, oh, I never thought of that. You know, and that's the kind of impact you want to have on A&R people or your listener. If you're the artist and you're singing it at a coffee shop, you don't want them to go, oh, yeah, I think I've heard that song from a lot of other people. You know, you want them to go, that's really unique. And yeah. So, you know, I think for me, it starts with kind of asking myself, like, When would I say this in real life, or who would say this in real life? And I start thinking through all the scenarios. Well, like a parent might say it to a child, or you might say it to your fiance, or, you know, I go through all the different possibilities. And then I start thinking about, well, what's the most unique angle? What's the angle that more people are going to relate to and all that kind of stuff? And I really try to shine a light on that title from all different angles so that I'm coming up with something that's unique. And it's, you know, so even if the A&R person has heard that title, if they listen to my song, they're going to go, oh, okay, that's different than all the ones
yeah,
that I heard.
I mean, you know, in a way, that's, I like when I can have a title that's been written before and the A&R person puts it in to play it, hits play, puts it in. I'm thinking of like CDs. Like, uh-huh. I don't even think we do that anymore.
You like eight track. Popped in the eight track.
Popped in the cassette. No, when they hit play, listen to the song, if they think they know where it's going and you hit them with something different, that's like impressive. Like that's what you want. And, you know, we're talking about being different, but a lot of times I see people, they try to write songs and they try to be different for the sake of being different. Yeah. And then the songs are just whacked out. Yeah, they're different.
They're weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So you still want to speak the language of the songs in your format. You know, songs have a certain language. You want to speak the language, but you also want to bring in something different and unique that only you have, your perspective.
And that's why I start with who would say this. Because if I come up with a realistic scenario in which someone would say my title, it's not going to be weird, you know. But if I'm just trying to be different, I may go, well, you know, maybe a clown would say this to an elephant, you know. I mean, that's not going to happen in real life, you know. So I think kind of grounding it in real life can help you stay in the ballpark, but you can still find some unique angles to hit it with, you know. When I mentor people, invariably, I see titles that involve the word summer, like say Missing Summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, please, God, do not let this be about a girl named Summer, you know, and 80% of the time it is, you know, and we all have, I have those songs, you know, early in my career, I had some of those songs too. We all think, oh, this is brilliant. I'll make it mean Summer the season and Summer the girl. Well, the problem is that's been done 5 million times, right. You know.
So how do you know when you're starting out? Like, you and I have heard songs for years in town. You know, we've written with a lot of artists, so we hear a lot of ideas. How does someone just starting out kind of know that they're onto something different and they're not just going to... Because it's embarrassing to go play a song, like you said, for an artist or a producer or a label person, and they're sitting there on the other side going, oh, I've heard this idea about 3 times today and about 100 times in the last year. Mm-hmm. You know, so how do you avoid that?
In the beginning of my career, I would go to the ASCAP or BMI database and search for the title. So like if I thought I found a really unique title, I would search for that title and I would see how many songs have already been registered with that title. And at times I would think I had something super unique and there'd be 600 songs already with that title. I'm like, okay, I thought I was brilliant, but you know, I'm in there with a bunch of other people. And then every now and then, like one time I discovered that there was no songs with that title. I'm like, okay, that's something really unique, you know? And if I do find that there's a bunch of songs with that title, I go, okay, if I'm going to write that title, I've got to write it in a really different way. I can't write it in the most obvious way because 80% of these 500 or 600 songs are going to be that, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of check myself against what's out there. And, you know, sometimes too, I'll Google the title and see if there's already a song out there. You know, cause I don't want to pitch a song to Tim McGraw and they go, well, he had a song on his last album called that, you know?
Although he has recorded 2 songs in his career with the same title.
Shotgun Rider or something like that. Yeah.
George Strait did that too. Mm-hmm. For me, on the music side of writing, I always try, your gut knows if you feel like, have I heard this before? Does this sound familiar? Mm-hmm. I always try to push past and keep pushing and keep digging until I come up with something that I go, oh, wow, this excites me. I haven't heard this mm-hmm. before. Whether it's going to a different chord. One of my songs I did with Darius Rucker, his first number one song, Don't Think I Don't Think About It. I had a chorus that kind of used some not typical chords, but, you know, common chords that mm-hmm. people use in songs. So when it came time to write the verse, I purposely said, I want to start the verse on a 5 chord. That was my goal. I didn't know how I was going to get from that 5 chord to the chorus. I didn't know that, but I made it my mission. I said, I'm going to start with the 5 chord. And by doing that, it put that song in a sonic area that had not been done on country radio. So mm-hmm. I think if you're trying to do something that's different and you make that your goal of digging, I could have just stayed, the chorus was on the 1 chord. I could have started the verse on the 1 chord, repeated the same chords, but I didn't do that. I said, I want to go to the 5 chord. And I think that made that song stand out. So if you can do something that's a little different and push past that feeling of, have I heard this before? You don't want the people listening to think that. Mm-hmm. You want them to go, wow, I've never heard this before. Mm-hmm. This is cool. And I think it's the same way when you're writing lyrics, you do the same thing. You try to push past that obvious first exit, you call it.
Yeah, absolutely. My first top 10 hit, we went from a 4 to a 4 minor. Which was a really, like, to my ear when it was Danny Wells that did that. And I'm like, whoa, that sounds kind of weird, you know?
It gives a melancholy kind of sound.
Yeah, and he was like, no, just trust me on this. And it was really cool. And I think that's a big part of what made that song stand out.
4 minor is a substitute for a 5 chord. So instead of going 4, 5, 1, you go 4, 4 minor, 1.
Whoa.
And then it...
Mind blown. Yeah, I mean, so I think... You know, to make, if you want to stand out, and especially if you've got a title that's pretty common, you just have to work really hard on that angle of how, you know, how you're going to write it, to still sound realistic that yeah. someone would say it, but also be something that really delivers something different, you know? And it's a, when we're mentoring or teaching classes, it's a joy for us. We hear so many songs. It's a joy when we hear something and like, whoa, I never thought of that. You know, that such a great title or such a great angle on that.
And if it's really good, we might actually take the song and help the writer pitch it to somebody because yeah. those songs are hard to come by, the ones that really stand out and are phenomenal. So if I come across one of those songs, I don't care if I wrote it, you wrote it, or one of our Songtown members wrote it. We want to help that song find a home.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in a meeting with a sync supervisor 2 weeks ago, and she was talking about the Marvel movies. And she said, you know, she's just a big music lover. And she said, you know, my goal for every movie I work on is to find a song so great for the end credits that people don't turn it off.
Wow.
And she said, I want a song that just when people hear it come on, they're like, I'm going to watch all the credits because I want to hear this song.
And this is exactly my argument when writers are worried about AI taking their job. So a Marvel movie is more of a high budget kind of movie. So in those situations, supervisors are trying to find the best damn song they can. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to find an AI creation that's gonna save them money. And I think it's always important to realize for the most important movie soundtracks, the artists that are the biggest artists, they all want the best song they can. They want something new. They want something fresh, something different. AI can't do that yet. AI takes the bar. This is average. This is where the average bar is. And it raises it so anybody can now write a little higher, but all they've done is raise the average. Mm-hmm. You know, and so situations like that, average is not going to keep people watching at the end of mm-hmm. a movie credit. That's where they need something unique, something different, something that comes from the voice of a real writer. That's where I think AI is not going to be able to take your job as a writer is, you know, because songwriting is not a formula. You know, we're looking for the magic beyond that formula. Yeah. And that's where your individual voice comes into play
yeah,
and
absolutely.
Your instincts and your gut and that drive to create something special.
Yeah. And each of us have the ability to do that in a way that no one else can if we can really tap into that, you know. And I think, too, there's a misperception about people in music business like supervisors or A&R people that are screening music and that the misperception is that they're just trying to keep everybody out. They're not. They're music lovers for the most part who want to find greatness.
And they're trying to keep their job.
Yeah, they're trying to keep
and
their
finding
job.
Greatness is how they keep their
exactly.
job.
Exactly. And so, you know, they're not trying to keep us out. They're trying to keep out average stuff because there's just so much of it and they're inundated with that, with average, so that when you do pitch them something amazing, they jump out of the chair, you know, and they go, okay, this is my song. It's going to keep everybody watching all the end credits that come by in this movie, you know?
Yeah, I had a Songtown member the other day that had just joined, and he wrote me and said that he has 10 songs. He goes, if I played 10 songs for a major artist, they would keep 7 of them. And I'm going, wow. I've been in pitch meetings with Hall of Fame writers, with the hottest writers in town playing songs, a whole room full of people playing songs for an artist or a producer or a label, and they didn't find 7 songs that day. Yeah. Like, I think it's easy when we're writing by ourselves, we're writing at home, and we have no exposure to the outside world to go, oh, my song's better than any of this other stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you really sit in someone's office and play them a song, it becomes apparent, oh, yeah, that second verse needs work. Like, you hear things in a different way. So we can't overestimate our work. We have to dig in. We have to get better as writers. We have to dig past that obvious and try to come up with something that's magical.
Yeah. You know? And I think, you know, back to the title of this episode, Why Do Good Songs Fail? I challenge everybody, don't try to write good songs. Try to write great songs.
Yeah.
You know, and we all have lots and lots and lots of good songs. You and I've got hard drives full of good songs. There's no shortage of those in the world. There's a shortage of great songs.
You know?
And sometimes those aren't written in one day. And sometimes they take months or years to develop the idea and that kind of stuff. But you have to be committed. If you want to succeed, I think you have to be committed to greatness. And one of the worst things when I'm going to co-write, if one of my co-writers go, well, yeah, that line works. I'm like, oh, no, that's we want to get beyond that.
Yeah.
We want something, not just something that works, but something that's great, you know? And so whenever I hear that, I'm like, okay, we got to fix that line. We got to make that better.
Yeah. Bob Dylan said the world, he goes, there's so many songs in the world, we don't need any more songs. Mm. The world does not need more songs, but there's always room for a great song.
Right.
And that's what we're looking for. And so today, AI can write 1 billion songs. I'm just throwing out a number. Mm-hmm. I imagine you could get computers across the world to spit out 1 billion songs today. It's not going to matter.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think one of the things, too, that kind of throws us off these days is like with 100,000 songs going up on Spotify a day.
Yeah, 100,000.
You can find all kinds of crappy music out there, and you can tell yourself, well, my songs are better than those. Yeah, but those songs are getting 45 listens.
Yeah.
You know? And so just because people are putting music out there and yours is better than that doesn't mean it's great. Yeah. You know, and that can be deceiving because it used to be pretty much all we heard was what was on the radio, or if we went and bought an album, what was on a major label artist, and there was you saw where the bar was.
Right.
You know, where the bar of greatness, you know, to get on that record. For that artist, I've got to have songs that are at this level, you know. So yeah. I think comparing ourselves to what just everything that's out there can be deceiving. So we have to look at, like, where's the bar for the big goal that we're trying to reach? And then we have to try to exceed that.
So it's almost like you have to dig deeper to find the great writers that you admire and study their work and shut out all the noise. Mm-hmm. Like you said, 100,000 songs a day on Spotify, 99.9% of that is noise. Mm-hmm. And that's what a computer can replace.
Right.
But a computer cannot replace that magic that happens when somebody writes just
heart
cue.
Yeah.
We've had Songtown members that have written a song that was a good idea, well written, and it explodes all around the world overnight. I mean, that's what you're looking for, is that song that moves people, not something that is just, yeah, that sounds really good.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, let's thank our sponsor, Sweetwater. We appreciate their support, and we'll see you guys next episode. Cheers.
Take care.